Hi, folks. Galen Clavio here. Welcome back to the Bracket Racket here on HoopsHD.com. Glad you're joining us once again as we get set for another hour of college basketball discussion, talking about what happened during an admittedly abbreviated week of college basketball, as we had Christmas right smack dab in the middle of this week, and that put a bit of a damper on what would have been normally a pretty heavy slate of games. But
we need to get rid of Christmas. I mean, it completely, Christmas and finals disrupt what's really important.
Right. Well, you know, I'd be fine with getting rid of finals, I can tell you that. But Christmas might have to stick around. But anyway, a lot to talk about, some games this past week of note and of interest, and also a lot coming up this next week as we get set for the start of conference season pretty much everywhere. A couple of conferences have had a few games, but as far as the big-time major conferences and the big-time games, those are really starting up in earnest this week. David Griggs joining us on the show. David, how are you excited about New Year's Day coming up here this week?
Very much so. New Year's Day is the day that because of the incident at the Macy's Parade, I'm incarcerated and can't move right now, but at least the audio works where I'm at. So I get released that day, and I'll be back in full motion picture after that. But I'm mainly excited about the games.
I'm kind of surprised that you're incarcerated, but they're letting you have an internet feed. That's
what Chad Sherwood, as your counsel, does for you.
Well, that's, you know what, Chad is a top-notch attorney, and if you're looking for any sort of personal injury assistance, call Chad Sherwood. We'll give you his phone number before the end of the show. Kyle Lamb also joining us. Kyle, hi.
I could use some personal injury assistance right now, or health insurance or assistance or something. I'm sicker than, you know what, I'm sicker and more ailing right now than the West Coast Conference non-conference resume. That's how sick I am.
And that's bad.
That is pretty damn sick. I mean, let's not mince words here. The West Coast Conference did not have a good week, and we'll talk about their tournament prospects as well as some other conferences that might be struggling here coming up. But, guys, let's wind our way through some of the important games that happened during the course of this past week. We'll start back on Monday, and we'll head out to Hawaii. Iowa State picking up a win, 83-60 over Akron. Not a surprise, maybe a little bit of surprise at how well Iowa State played in that game. But, Kyle, more to your point, St. Mary's losing to the hometown Rainbow Warriors, 76-74. And then St. Mary's, of course, that wasn't probably even the worst loss they had, but they bookended that loss with losses to South Carolina and George Mason. So now St. Mary's sitting at 9-3 on the season. No good wins really to speak of except for that road win against Boise State. This is trouble for this Gales team at this point.
Yeah, that's St. Mary's went for a non-tournament team hat trick in a trio of losses this week. That's not what you want for a team that already doesn't have any wins against tournament teams to go out and lose to three non-tournament teams in three consecutive days. I mean, you might as well go ahead and just bypass the rest of the West Coast Conference season because it's pretty much meaningless for St. Mary's as far as at-large credentials are concerned. I mean, they're done with. I mean, their only chance, you know, from here on out is to go win the West Coast tournament in early March because they killed themselves this week.
Well, I don't know. I was speaking with fake Joe Lenardi earlier today, and he brought up an interesting point. Losing to Iowa State isn't that bad, and Iowa State was in that tournament.
Yes, but they didn't lose to them is the problem, right?
There is. If you want to get technical, yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel like we owe it to our audience to get technical on this. I'm sorry, but yeah, yes. It's a bad situation for St. Mary's.
Lord. Joe Lenardi to misunderstand that.
Well, you know, I mean, fake Joe Lenardi really does believe that the committee, one of their criteria is simply proximity. Like the closer you are to a team, the more likely you are to go to the NCAA tournament. It's a tried and true method.
Well, all kidding aside, I was so big on this St. Mary's team, and what's disappointing is that I really think that this isn't a case of them not being good enough. They are good enough. They just didn't perform up to the level that they needed to or could and lost three games to teams that aren't going to get anywhere close to the NCAA tournament. Just a horrendous showing. I think they're shooting yourself in the foot, and then they're shooting yourself in the mouth. I think they just blew their head off out there.
Matthew Dellavedova is not walking through that door.
Wow. I mean, it was such a really just piss-poor showing all three games.
It was bad. Another team that was out there, there were really three teams of note, Boise State. Boise State's kind of in an interesting spot right now, Kyle. I mean, they're really in no better shape than St. Mary's at this stage. I mean, they've got nice losses. They lost to Kentucky and St. Mary's earlier, and then so I guess maybe technically St. Mary's is in slightly better shape since they do have a head-to-head victory. And then they lost to Iowa State in the championship game of that tournament. It was a close game. I mean, it was a four-point game. It was kind of down to the wire. But, you know, Boise State, they're really not in a position right now to get an at-large bid at this stage. They really they don't have any other way to make up it for the lack of non-conference wins.
Yeah, and this has been the story of their season all year, is that they, especially against Iowa State, they were really probably about a 2 or 3 minute defensive stretch away from you know, picking up a huge win. I mean, they played really well against Iowa State, you know, led for much of the game, not the entire way through, but for much of the game, and had a very good chance of knocking off the Cyclones, but they just can't sustain defense for long enough to get enough stops in it. And I thought Iowa State's athleticism kind of wore them down at the very end. They played really well, but you know, playing really well sometimes when you're lacking wins is not good enough. I mean, I think they're a team that is good enough to be in the tournament as an at-large team. I'm not sure that they're going to have the resume to support that.
David, let's jump over to Iowa State real quick. This Iowa State team still undefeated, 11-0, and they're going to beat Northern Illinois on Tuesday. So they're going to enter conference play 12-0. They've got wins against Michigan, BYU, Iowa, and Boise State. How good is this Iowa State team realistically?
I think that they're a fringe protected seed. So we're talking 4, 5, 6 seed. I mean, again, they're solidly in the field. They're a first ballot team. Now, are they going to be on one of the top 2 or 3 lines? I don't think they're that good. I mean, of course, if they go out and blow through Big 12 play, they'll be up there. But I think that they're about as good as their current ranking, and their resume, I think it'll look about the same at the end of the year. They might get a notable win at home against Kansas or Baylor. I don't know if they're going to go on the road and beat one of those teams. I don't think they got it in them to win at Kansas and Oklahoma State. They might have it in them to beat one of those teams at home. But other than that, that's about where I would place them, a fringe protected seed.
So basically, it's like every other year of the Big 12's history where there are two teams on top and Iowa State can't quite get it done.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's always a second team finishing behind Kansas.
Yes, that's true. Although this year I think it's probably going to be either Oklahoma State or it's going to be Oklahoma State first and Kansas finishing second. Probably not. But anyway, don't want to spend a whole lot more time on Iowa State. Really only one more game before the weekend that I wanted to get to. And, Kyle, this one's directed at you. In Evanston, DePaul knocks off Northwestern.
Can I go back to having 102 fever?
This is awful, Kyle. This might be the nadir of the Big Ten's existence at this stage. I mean, this is real, real bad.
Well, you know, actually, the Big Ten Network called this a crosstown rivalry, which is you know, I about fell out of my chair. I mean, I was only in the chair for about 10 minutes, and I about fell out of my chair when I heard that. You know, Northwestern is really making a case for you know, one of the worst 2 or 3 major conference teams in the country this year. Losing to DePaul like that, that's a crushing blow. They have solidified themselves as the worst team in the Big Ten, and it's not even a race.
It's really interesting. I mean, I think we all knew that the the Chris Collins era wasn't going to get off to that raging of a start. Well, everybody except Chicago media, who seemed to think he was going to come in there and part the waters of Lake Michigan on the shores where it meets Evanston. But this is a putrid offensive team for Northwestern. I mean, they are 251st in the nation right now in points per possession. You know, and it's not just that they've lost to DePaul. They lost to Illinois State at home. You know, they've lost all of the good teams that they should have lost to, but these two, that one in Illinois State, that is not a way to make a living. And, you know, and it's not going to be pretty for this Northwestern team, because their first five games in the Big Ten are Wisconsin at home, Michigan and Iowa on the road, and then Illinois and Michigan State at home. And it really doesn't get significantly easier from there. Like, they've got Purdue at home, they've got Nebraska at home, they've got Penn State at home the second to last game of the year. This is a real, like, 0-18 potential candidate in Big Ten play. I mean, I feel like I'm not underselling that. That this is not a team that really has much going for it at this stage, except for Drew Crawford, I guess. So
yeah, where would they be without him? I mean, he's the only thing keeping them even semi-competitive, and as much as you can be competitive when you're losing to teams like DePaul and Illinois State.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you think Chicago, you think this is the mecca of the worst of the power conferences between them and DePaul and Northwestern. Wow. If the Big East is even a power conference anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of a worse intra-city power conference matchup at this point. I don't even want to think about it anymore, so we'll just ignore that. Anyway, David, we're going to move on to Saturday. And the big game, of course, the one that they engaged the EAS alert for when
the game did not air
in time. I don't know. Tell that story, please.
Okay, so I'm back in – I mean, again, I was furloughed to visit family and friends here in Puppet Land. And as you know, the Syracuse-Villanova game, another big game, probably more important actually, started at 2, and Louisville and Kentucky would start off at 4. And as anyone with any common sense would know, the 2 o'clock game is going to run over. CBS paid a fortune for these games, and they don't want them to overlap. So there's that rule in place that an hour before the game, some administrator, I don't know if it's CBS or someone in charge of event management, can move the tip-off back 15 minutes. This is all true. So an hour before the game, the decision is made to start the Louisville-Kentucky game at 4:18 instead of 4:03, so they don't have to cut away from Syracuse, Villanova.
Right.
And but again, all people in Kentucky know is that the game is supposed to start at 4. So at 4 o'clock, they don't cut away. They've made announcements on TV, but apparently that wasn't enough. People are calling into the local CBS station. People are calling 911. Where's the Louisville-Kentucky game? And they literally use the emergency alert system, the local CBS affiliates, to break into coverage to announce that the game had not started yet, that it was starting at 4:18, and that they would cut away in time and that no one would miss anything. It was spectacular.
I mean, We love basketball in Indiana, folks. They've never used the emergency alert system to do that. So,
can I ask a quick question, David Griggs? If you're getting furloughed for this type of thing, do you have conjugal visits?
Absolutely. Well, yes, my Twitter account. They're allowed to.
Anyway, so, David, let's get to the game. Kentucky-Louisville, this was, for all the hype that this game got and all the talk about, well, this is the best rivalry in college sports, you know, whatever, neither of these two teams is really impressed so far this year. They hadn't really beaten anybody.
No.
And so coming into this game, you know, it was kind of give or take who you wanted to pick. Kentucky did a good job of jumping out early, establishing themselves in the game. And I thought Louisville looked underwhelming pretty much the whole time. I really wasn't terribly overwhelmed with Kentucky, but they did more than enough to get the job done.
Right.
What did this game tell us, in your opinion, about these two teams?
Well, it's kind of hard to say. This game, as big as it is, I don't think it's the biggest rivalry in college basketball. I think it's the most bitter. And I think there's so much bitterness that you oftentimes get a poorly played, sloppy game. It wasn't a well-played game, but I'll say this. Like, it's one of the better-played games that I'd seen between the two in the last 5 or 6 years. One of the things we learned from Louisville is that for the 30th year in a row, they failed to understand that for the first 4 minutes between the time of the tip and the first under 16 timeout, the refs are going to call it close, they're going to call it tight, they're going to call everything. And for the 30th year in a row, 5 minutes into the game, Louisville's in foul trouble, or 31st, or however long they've been playing it. So they weren't smart. Like, it was a lot of energy. Louisville did not – Kentucky ate them alive on the boards, and they are a better rebounding team. But one of the things Louisville did not do was they didn't work to get open looks from the outside, which – the teams that have that Kentucky struggled that against have done a good job doing that. Louisville would drive the lane, force up contested shots, and then not get the rebound, and it seemingly did that over and over and over. They couldn't adjust, and it didn't, to me, seem like a very hard adjustment to make, and they never did it. I'll say this, like, I thought that Kentucky, I thought Louisville was by far the better team. I thought they looked better. I mean, they had beaten some decent NIT-caliber teams badly, whereas Kentucky had struggled. But Kentucky really beat – I mean, they just played better. Their defense was better. They took better shots. They had more energy. They made better adjustments. Louisville actually jumped out to an 8-0 lead. And from that point on, Kentucky basically outscored them by 15.
Yeah. I thought we were having flashbacks watching Chris Jones and Russ Smith in this game. It felt like 2 years ago watching Peyton Siva and Russ Smith just chuck up every bad shot in the book. It was they were completely out of control in this game.
And so in a pressure situation, Louisville goes on instinct and they don't calm down because again they kept chucking up bad shots. It looked to me like it was a form of panic and. I realize that this is a highly intense game, but if they're going to do it in this game, are they going to do it in your more important – I know the Bluegrass State might disagree with that, but the games in conference mean more, the conference tournament means more, the NCAA tournament means more. When you get into these more meaningful games, are they going to do the same thing? Because this is the second time Louisville's faced a top opponent and really not played well.
And I think this brings up a larger point. And, we here on the Bracket Racket – and Hoops HD in general, we like to help you folks out there that watch college basketball and are confused sometimes by the statements that are made by the national basketball media. And I would be very confused if I was just an average fan following the coverage of this game, because in the aftermath of the game, you would now think that Kentucky is a Final Four contender. In fact, Seth Davis said that at halftime. The game wasn't even over yet. He said it at halftime of the game. Look, this was the first decent win by Kentucky all season. And the thing I find fascinating is we don't even know how decent the win was because Louisville has no decent wins this season.
Right,
you look at Louisville's accrued resume so far, as David just pointed out. They lost to North Carolina by 9. They lose to Kentucky by 7. Their next best win, arguably, is against Louisiana Lafayette.
I would say Southern Miss, but yeah.
I mean, maybe Southern Miss. Either way, neither of those teams is going to the tournament. And with Kentucky, like we said, congratulations, you beat Louisville. How good of a win is that, really? I mean, all that we know about Louisville is that Ken Pomeroy really likes them, or at least his ratings
do. It's a Final Four win. That's how good it is.
Well, right, exactly. It's a Final Four win. So let's not tap the brakes. Let's just break completely. Let's come to a complete stop on both of these teams. I mean, the idea that this win for either one, I don't care if it had been Louisville that had beat Kentucky or if it had been Kentucky that had beaten Louisville, the idea that the quality of win was somehow good enough that either team would suddenly be considered a national championship caliber squad after what we've seen from each of them so far this season is ludicrous. It's just stupid.
Funny story about that Seth Davis comment, Galen. I was coming to my computer. I was just getting ready to type out an email to our group saying, I wonder who the first one will be after this game to call Kentucky a Final Four team because of this win. And no sooner do I get to the computer, Seth Davis makes the comment that Kentucky looks like a Final Four team. Well, I didn't even get a chance to type the email. He had already said it before I got to ask the question.
Yeah. Building on your point, Galen, again, while I've been locked up, this is very pertinent to bracketology. I've been doing a little bit of research. I looked at last year's field, and of the 50 teams that were seeded 12th or better, and keep in mind there's 50 now because of the play-in games and the at-large teams, 40 of them won an out-of-conference game against the other 50. Did I explain that right? So
yes.
Okay, so essentially 40 of the 50 teams that were in a position to get in at large won an out-of-conference game against another of the 50. Here are the 10 that didn't. Villanova, who was 10-8 in conference. Oklahoma, 11-7. Ohio State, 13-5 and won the Big Ten tournament. Notre Dame, 11-7. But Notre Dame, although they didn't get one, they did beat Baylor and Kentucky, who were bubble teams. Iowa State, 4 games over .500. Ole Miss, 6 games over .500, 12-6, and they won the SEC tourney, and they still only got a 12 seed. NC State, 4 games over .500, and they beat UConn, who would have been in the tournament. Cal, 6 games over. Memphis, 19-0, automatic bid, and Colorado State, 6 games over. So of those, you know, of the 10 that didn't win a big out-of-conference game, all but one of them were 4 games over or more in their conference, or they won an automatic bid. So when you start to look at that and you look at Louisville, what do they have to do to get into the tournament? And I'm not trying to throw up a panic alert saying that Louisville's not going to make the tournament, but they're really not in good shape right now.
Well, that's good, because apparently they've exhausted their panic alerts down there in Kentucky.
Yeah, man, put an emergency alert out for Louisville's non-conference schedule. Yeah. They'll be able to do something about it. No, it's a good point, though. And yeah. And look, I just – what I get so tired of with the coverage of college basketball is that was great information you just gave us, David. Where are the people that are getting paid to do this and aren't in jail? Where are they with giving this information? It's frustrating as all hell, because that's the sort of thing that we really need to be talking about. And you know, and with Kentucky, I think it's the same thing. I mean, Kentucky's now got a non-conference win against a team that doesn't have a non-conference win of any quality. Does that mean that is a quality non-conference win? No, it doesn't. So what's the big deal? How is that performance in any way, shape, or form indicative of a Final Four caliber team?
Yeah.
To be established as a Final Four team, you've got to prove you can beat a Final Four team. If Louisville hasn't proven they themselves are a Final Four team, I don't see how you can call another team a Final Four team. And never mind that, you know, we get caught up in this ridiculous hyperbole about what's a Final Four team. It doesn't even matter what a Final Four team is in December, because it's December. But you're right. It's just there's no accountability with the media.
Even if we're gonna launch into the hyperbole of who's a Final Four team and who's not, Kyle, my point is, and you agree with it, but it's like, even if we're gonna to you know, go off the reservation as far as that's concerned, at least make it teams that actually have done some things so far this season. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, I don't see the media jumping out to say Wisconsin's a Final Four team, and no, I mean, no. You know, maybe they're not, but they've at least done more than Kentucky or Louisville has.
Right. So anyway, let's jump off that game, gentlemen. And Kyle, let me go to you on this. Syracuse-Villanova, this was a weird game. We saw the game start off with, you know, Villanova just jumping out to a big lead. I mean, at one point, Villanova, I think, was leading, 25 to 10.
28-7 at one point.
28-7. No, it was never 28-7.
No, 25-7. I'm
25-7. And from that point on, Syracuse really just jammed on the accelerator. By halftime, Syracuse was leading 38-34. I give Villanova credit in this. They kept it close through most of the second half, and at one point I think it was 56-52 with about 7 minutes to play. And then things got way out of hand towards the end. Syracuse ends up winning this game 78-62. You know, I mean, Syracuse, they're a very good team. I was impressed with what Villanova did initially. I was more impressed with how Syracuse responded to it. And I think, you know, if you're looking for a team that has, you know, has got some relatively well-accomplished victories on their schedule, has got good talent, has got good coaching, if you're looking for a team to back for the Final Four, Kyle, you could do a lot worse than the Syracuse squad at this point.
Yeah, you really could. You know, funny, I actually, in this, I was on record. I mentioned when they were up 18, I mentioned, you know, the spread in this game was -4. So before the game went over, Syracuse would go on a big run and wind up, you know, almost covering or covering the spread. And they actually did that even before halftime. But no, I thought this was a very good win for Syracuse. I didn't think Villanova would be able to shoot the ball against the zone, and that was a factor. But I tell you what really surprised me is that the Syracuse zone really hasn't been that dominant this year. Defensive efficiency, they're only giving up almost 0.95 points per possession, which is not bad, but it's not otherworldly. But it's actually been their offense that's been really efficient this year. And I mean, Tyler Ennis, for a true freshman point guard, has done everything they've expected him to do and more. This was a pretty good Villanova defense that they scored. Last I saw, I think they were up to 1.15 points per possession against, which is very, very good for a team that was giving up only 0.9. This Syracuse offense has been really efficient, and like you said, they've done it against a decent schedule. I mean, it's not a blockbuster, but they haven't had any blockbuster wins, but they've had three or four solid wins so far. Really, really impressed with the Syracuse team.
David, Villanova with their first real adversity of the season. I mean, Villanova, it's funny, actually is more accomplished right now overall than Syracuse, except for the fact that they lost to Syracuse. But it was at Syracuse, and you look at the rest of what Villanova's done so far this year: neutral court wins against Kansas and Iowa, and a road win against St. Joe's. They've had a good season so far. They're still very good defensively, and even with this loss, they have to feel pretty good about going into the Big East schedule in the shape that they're in at this stage.
Yes, and again, they're in excellent shape. This loss doesn't hurt them in the least. A win, okay, you want to talk about a Final Four caliber win. It would have been one of the four or five most impressive wins of the year, maybe the most impressive that anybody had ever managed had they gone in there and beat Syracuse. I know they jumped out to an 18-point lead and then lost by 16, and that Syracuse basically outscored them by 34 in the final 25 minutes of the game. But still, I mean, Villanova has nothing to be discouraged about. I mean, I know you kind of get your you feel like your knuckles are wrung a little bit after you lose a game like that, but they're in great shape. I mean, really, it's not completely out of the question that they're going to wind up on one of the top two lines. And I don't even think it's that outrageous. Who in the Big East is nearly as good as them? I mean, who can beat them?
Yeah, at this point, it's interesting because you look down the schedule for Villanova, and I mean, their best competition is probably Creighton at this point in the conference. I mean, Georgetown, for as much as people talk about them, I mean, that Georgetown team's 8-3. They've been kind of meh on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
Xavier, we've talked about on the show before, hasn't looked very good.
No.
Marquette hasn't looked particularly good. I mean, there's really not a lot of challenges. I mean, they're not going to go undefeated throughout the course of the conference schedule, but they're in really good shape, and if they can avoid any if they lose to DePaul like Northwestern did, then that's a problem. But if they can avoid stuff like that, if they can avoid home losses in the conference, I think seeding-wise they're going to be in very good shape, because I think Kansas and Iowa on neutral floors, those are going to be two of the better wins that we see all season.
The good news is, while the Big East doesn't have a lot of great wins to be had, it also, other than DePaul, doesn't have any really atrocious losses either.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're going to hurt themselves in the Big East too much. They may not be able to help themselves a lot, but they won't hurt themselves a lot either.
Let's talk about, David, another team that was in action on Saturday, and one that surprised not just you but a lot of folks. Missouri, who hasn't had a banner year by any means. I mean, they've had a couple of okay wins. They beat UCLA and West Virginia at home. But they go on the road. They beat North Carolina State, who's an okay team. I mean, I think NC State's going to struggle to get into the tournament, but they did beat them, and that was a surprise given the history of Missouri and Frank Haith.
Yeah, it really. I mean, this is a team, and again, you just said it. NC State is maybe a solid NIT team. It the very, very most absolute ceiling, a bubble NCAA tournament team. We're not talking about a great win, but we're talking about a win that you almost never see Missouri get. Like, they are atrocious on the road against sub-NIT teams. They can't go on the road and win. And they went out and they beat NC State, something I didn't think they were going to win that game until the horn went off, even though it was close, even though they looked good. I mean, I was surprised, and I must admit, After they lost to Illinois, I'm like, well, that's typical. There's no way they're going to sit in a visiting locker room where the dark jerseys have to pack a suitcase and win a basketball game. Those are just things Missouri can't do. But they did it. And maybe, to me, it solidifies them as a legitimate, not bubble team, but safe at large caliber team, at least for now. I was impressed.
I was thinking about bronzing a portable toilet and sending it to Frank Hathen, commemorating his work on the go, because this is the first time they've been able to actually get the job done away from Columbia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think at this point they just have to avoid major stumbles. I mean, God, you look at the SEC right now. If you go by the Pomeroy ratings, there's really, I mean, and you combine them with records, there's really only five teams in contention for NCAA berths at this point total. I think Tennessee,
Florida, Mizzou, Kentucky. Oh, Tennessee.
No. Hold on. I was gonna say Florida, Kentucky, LSU. Believe it or not.
Yeah, they're not.
I think Missouri you'd put in there, and you would. I think you probably have to count Arkansas as well. I mean, they've avoided most of the missteps that they could have in the non-conference portion of the season. But I mean, some, a team like Tennessee's borderline, but I mean, they lost to NC State at home. They lost to UTEP on a neutral floor. And they've still got to play Virginia, and I think they lose that game, and they lose to Virginia, now they're 7-5. The rest of the conference, I mean, maybe Ole Miss, but again, they've beaten nobody at this point. Penn State doesn't count. So my point is this. You know, you look at this Missouri team, they're going to have to avoid slipping up against the lower reaches of the conference. If they can do that, I agree with you. I think they're a pretty safe bet to make the NCAA tournament. I don't think they're a threat to beat Kentucky or Florida, but I think that they should beat everybody else in the lower reaches of the conference. And I think if they can win more games than they lose against LSU and Arkansas and Tennessee, then they'll be in fine shape.
Right. And it's not that I'm convinced.
I want to say something about that Tennessee team. If Quanzo Martin gets that team to the NCAA tournament, he deserves a Medal of Honor because, I mean, how tough is it to take a program and get them back to the tournament when your fan base is publicly boycotting you and rallying around a coach that was fired for cheating and they're campaigning to can you and bring back the cheater? I mean that you know it's crazy what's happening down there in Knoxville right now. I mean there's all kinds of talk about bringing back Bruce Pearl and everybody wants Martin gone. So if he can get them to a tournament, that would be I think a pretty big deal for where they're at the moment.
And that's utterly ridiculous. I think Quanzo Martin's a really good coach, and I mean the circumstances haven't favored him at Tennessee, but I don't think he's going to be as successful as Bruce Pearl was, but he's really good. And he'll only be out of coaching for as long as he wants to be if Tennessee decides to get rid of him.
I mean, I don't understand the Tennessee fan base in any sport at all. Like, I don't understand them in football, men's basketball, women's basketball. I don't get them. That's I was not completely aware. I'd heard a little bit about that, Kyle, but I find that very strange, to say the least.
Yeah, Pearl actually had to come out and on Twitter and issue a statement saying, you know, it's hurting the program, and as much as he's touched by it, he wished that they would stand behind Martin. It's been really bad from what I can tell.
Yeah.
Man. One last thing from the SEC and from this weekend, Alabama. They gave UCLA a game on the road. They end up losing that game. This is an example of where ambitious scheduling can hurt you. This Alabama team is 5-7. They'll probably get to 6-7. They play Robert Morris on Saturday. But you look at the games they've lost: Oklahoma, Duke, Drexel, Wichita State, Xavier, UCLA. As you also got a loss against South Florida in there, which isn't good. But this Anthony Grant, this might be the end of the road. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Unless this team really turns it around. I mean, granted, if you're an average team, you can win 9 games in the SEC, but there's just no hope right now with this Alabama squad.
Yeah, 9 in the SEC won't be enough without at least one notable out-of-conference win. They don't have any.
Yeah.
I mean,
so,
he'll be fine, though. Alabama's got the coach they want.
Yeah, you're probably right. One other game of note from Saturday I wanted to bring up, the wheels falling off the BYU Cougars.
Oh, my God.
They've lost 3 in a row. Now, all 3 of those games were on the road. Losing to at Utah, that's okay. I mean, it's a rivalry game. Losing at Oregon in overtime, no shame there. Oregon's a good team. You can't lose at Loyola Marymount. Like, that's just
an honor code violation right there.
Really not allowed to lose to Loyola Marymount on the road. It wasn't even close. They lost by 9. And so they start off the West Coast Conference season 0-1. And, you know, you'd like to say, well, they've got an easy stretch of games from now until the Gonzaga game on the 25th of January. But one of those easy stretch of games is the return trip for Loyola Marymount going up to Provo. So who knows? I mean, it's really going downhill for this BYU squad, and it's almost entirely due to their defense. And, you know, this kind of leads into this larger point that we've been talking about, guys. Between what happened to Gonzaga, losing to Kansas State, losing to Dayton, between what happened to St. Mary's, you're really looking for a one-bid West Coast Conference champ. And at this point, what are you even looking at seeding-wise at this stage? I mean, you're down in the 13 range, I think, with all of these teams.
Yeah, I mean, if one of the teams gets out there, and if one of the three, and it would have to be BYU, St. Mary's, or Gonzaga, and goes 18-0, 17-1, 16-2, and then stumbles in the conference tournament, that might be enough. But essentially, like, when you have so little that's good on your profile, you better not have anything bad on there.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be worth watching, and, you know, there'll be a lot of people who are very surprised when the first regular projections start rolling out and Gonzaga or whoever's leading that conference is seated as low as they should be. But
if you're surprised, it's because you're listening to the wrong people.
Which I think, as we've determined, is pretty much listening to anybody with college basketball coverage duties at this stage. Anyway, we've got a couple of last games to cover here as far as non-conference. We're going to talk about our conference expectations here in a second, but I wanted to get to these games first. So tomorrow, we've got some interesting ones. Kyle, Virginia, as we mentioned, traveling to Tennessee. You know, Virginia, despite that stumble that they had earlier on against VCU and then the road loss against Green Bay, you know, they're 9-3. They're playing really good defense right now. You know, they've got a tough stretch of games coming up because they're going into the ACC regular season. But this will be an interesting test for them, having to go on the road against the Tennessee squad that has talent, obviously, but has struggled at times.
Yeah, this is a hornet's nest for Virginia. I mean, their defense will keep them in the game. They're going to keep their head above water, I think, most of the year to at least stay in the conversation. But they've got to win more games like this more often, and that's the problem. I don't think they've shown the type of consistency that they can win these games with regularity. They might beat Tennessee, but they're going to have to beat teams like Tennessee more often if they want to make the tournament this year, because that's right now going to be an issue for them.
St. Louis traveling to Vanderbilt. Now, winning that game won't really help St. Louis, but losing the game will probably hurt St. Louis if they have any aspirations for an at-large bid.
Absolutely, and they don't get. They're not going to get as many strikes as some other teams because the A-10 is good, but again, they haven't done a lot out of conference to where you can absorb a loss like that.
Yeah, the last one of note for tomorrow that's worth mentioning is Toledo traveling to Kansas. Toledo still unbeaten at this stage, but not really well regarded. If you look at their defensive statistics, it is legitimately shocking that they are 12-0 at this stage.
Behind the curtain.
Yeah, exactly. You also have to keep in mind that so far their best win on the season is Stony Brook, which I can only say so much about that because I believe up to this stage of the season, that's also Indiana's best win of the season is Stony Brook. So, So good company for Toledo there at this point. But Kansas, a horse of a different color. Kansas is projected to be a 14-point victory here.
Gosh, I mean, you worked that reference in. We're just all over this Wizard of Oz.
Yes. But anyway, Kansas they're going to win the game. I'm not holding my breath on this, but you know, Kansas 8-3 at this stage. And they've got two games against relatively decent non-conference competition before Big 12 season starts. This game, and then they have San Diego State at home coming up on Sunday.
That'll be a good one. This Toledo team, again, if they want, if they want people to take them seriously, then they can go in and beat Kansas. But I don't even think, if I'm wrong, I will wear a Toledo Rockets hat on the air next week. But I don't even think they're the third or fourth best team in their conference. Yeah. I mean, I think Akron, Kent, and Ohio are all better than they are.
Well, I'd like to think that they're going to take the Ruby Slippers with them, but for Kansas, there's no place like home, and that's a place that they haven't been a lot here in the past month. So
I feel like talking about this team makes it seem like we don't have a brain.
Yeah.
Anyway, we need to move on. What we wanted to do, folks, we wanted to get to our conference projections based on what we've seen so far this season. And we're not going to spend a huge amount of time on some of the conferences. I just kind of want to blow through them a little bit, but we'll try to cue them up one by one, at least as far as the major conferences, maybe a couple of the mid-majors, and just give you our what we're thinking is going on. Let's start with the American Athletic Conference. Let's start with me on this. You got Louisville, Memphis, UConn, Cincinnati. That's really kind of your top tier. I guess you could throw SMU in there. SMU is probably the least they're the ones that have the least that they could actually do. They really haven't accomplished that much so far this season. So really, you're looking at those top four squads. I think all these teams have flaws. I think my favorite out of all of them right now, though, is probably going to be UConn. I still don't trust Memphis in a season where they have to play a bunch of good teams in January and February and March. And by a bunch, I mean like three or four, which is three or four more than they had to play in Conference USA the last decade or so.
Yeah.
They beat Oklahoma State, obviously. They came close against Florida, but the day in day out pounding is going to be something they're not used to. UConn is used to it, obviously playing in the Big East. UConn beat Florida. Granted, that game was at home. I like the talent that UConn's got. I'm also really not sold on this Louisville team like we were talking about earlier on. I mean, I think their statistics have looked good mostly because they played a crap schedule thus far, and that's going to give them some problems. I really think I think UConn 1, Louisville 2, Memphis 3 at this stage. Kyle,
I'm not sold on Louisville nationally, but I still think they're the team to beat in this league. I just think that their press and their defense is still going to be too tough for anybody in the AC to match. I like Louisville to win. I think Connecticut and Memphis will battle for second.
David.
Yeah, I'm still going to go with Louisville because it seems like until about mid-January to late January, a constant theme is how disappointed we are in Louisville. And then they kind of, I don't know what it is, they hit their stride or they gel or they click or whatever. I think they're one of those teams that gets better over the holiday break. They get a lot out of those 8-hour practices because there's not the restrictions you have during school. So I do look for Louisville to continue improve and be a force. A team that I was huge on coming into the season that's kind of let me down is the Cincinnati team. So I would pick them fourth in ranking order and then UConn and Memphis. So, yeah, I just went 1-4-2-3, didn't I?
Mick Cronin says, oh, you're the one.
Yeah, that's right. Let's jump over to the Atlantic 10. And this is an interesting conference, guys. There's actually a really strong top four in UMass, St. Louis, VCU, and George Washington. All of these teams have accomplished at least something in the non-conference. I'd say St. Louis has probably accomplished the least out of the four. But UMass has looked really good against a pretty good slate of opponents. I think George Washington's been a real big surprise. And I think right below them you've got Dayton and Richmond who are kind of staying within touching distance of the folks up at the top. David, is your choice UMass here or do you like somebody else coming out of this?
I like UMass. I think there's other teams. I think St. Louis will do much better in conference. I just think St. Louis is a good team that for whatever reason fortune's worked against them and they just don't have the profile to currently demonstrate it. But I do think they're good. I think they're going to be right in there. I don't think they're as good as UMass, but in the end, I think they'll be in the thick of it and play their way into the field. Dayton, I was so big on them after Maui. I mean, I was really impressed. I was, they were in the top 25, and I thought they deserved it. But then, they continue to stub their toes in the kinds of games that you would expect tournament teams to win. I mean, everybody stubs their toe, seemingly, unless you're a one or a two seed and gets a couple strikes. But Dayton seemingly gets more than a couple, and they have. You know, losing at Illinois State, losing at home to Southern Cal. These are just not the kinds of games that, if you're a tournament team, you need to win 98% of those, and Dayton seems to only win 60 to 70% of them.
I think we've got a pattern here, folks. If you listen to David Griggs and he says he's really high on a Cincinnati area team, do not listen to him. I think that's ultimately that's the take-home lesson from all of this. Kyle, VCU, yes. You think they have a chance of jumping into this race?
Boy, did you see that game with Boston College? I mean, if you did, first of all, I pity you, because I mean, it was bad. They held a pretty good offensive team to what, 30 some points. I didn't see the final, but they really struggled. This VCU offense right now, they cannot score the basketball in a half court game. I really think that's going to catch up to them. I just don't, VCU might be able to stay on the bubble the rest of the year and still get an at-large bid, but I do not see them winning this league. I think it's going to be UMass or St. Louis.
Yeah, I think that the safe money here is on UMass. I mean, I like VCU's experience, and I mean, their defense is good, but their defense isn't better than St. Louis's. Their offense isn't better than UMass's. In fact, their offense is worse than UMass and Dayton, and I think that's a bad combination. I think UMass is the choice here. Let's jump over quickly to the Mountain West, Kyle. We talked a little bit about the travails of the West Coast Conference maybe being a one-bid league. Are you worried about that at all with this Mountain West field at this stage?
Yeah, you have to be, because, I mean, New Mexico has struck out against most of the good teams they faced. San Diego State, I think, is legitimate at-large caliber team. I will say this, they got off to a really bad start, but UNLV is really starting to play a lot better basketball.
Yeah, they are.
They have been, you know, at least competent in the last several weeks, if not actually looking good at times. You know, it seems like their backcourt is finally getting involved. Their front court is starting to play like it was expected to. Roscoe Smith has been very good for them. You know, I think UNLV, they're probably not going to have enough of a profile to get over the hump for this year, but I think down the stretch they're going to be a tough team to face.
David?
Yeah, I really like San Diego State. I mean, they've clearly looked better than anybody else. I think New Mexico will be inside the bubble as well. Boise State has a good team. You have to wonder what the thought process is when you put together an out-of-conference schedule like that, when you know you have a good team. Why sell yourself short? I could harp on that for an hour, but I'll spare the audience this week. But really, the only two teams I feel confidence in are New Mexico and San Diego State.
Yeah, I think ultimately, as long as neither one of those teams loses two games that they're not supposed to in conference, I think they can both make it as at-larges. I mean, New Mexico's done just enough with the Marquette win and with the win versus Cincinnati. I think that's going to help them. And I mean, really, if you want to get right down to it, I think they've, you know, it's funny, if Marquette makes the field, that's going to help the Mountain West, since that's like two of the top four wins in conference for the Mountain West were against Marquette. So, yeah. Something to keep in mind. Anyway, let's move on. Let's chat a little bit of Southeastern Conference. We were just talking about this earlier on, guys.
Oh.
We're not going to talk much about it.
Oh, okay.
Not much. But who do you like coming out on top? Is it Florida for you all the way? Do you like Kentucky? Do you like somebody else, David?
Florida, all the way.
All the way?
Yes.
Kyle?
Yeah, and I'll wait for my hate mail from the mainstream media, but I'm gonna have to say Florida too. I mean, keep in mind, not only Florida have they been playing, you know, with mostly full strength now for the past month, but they're also expecting to get Chris Walker as a bona fide, you know, stud athlete. They're expecting him to be in the rotation here in the next couple weeks, as he's just started practicing here in the last 2 weeks. He's a tremendous athlete, very strong physical four. He will make an impact for them before the season's over. So I'd like Florida to win this league.
Yeah, Florida has beaten Kansas, Florida State, Memphis. They lost at Wisconsin and Connecticut, but they weren't at full strength. But I don't know if they're good enough to be a Final Four team like Kentucky.
Real quick, I agree on Florida as well. But quick, guys, how many bids does this SEC get? I'm going to say four. Kyle?
Yeah,
I think four is the ceiling. I think three or four. I think they'll find a way to get four, but I think that's the ceiling.
All right. Yeah. Let's jump over to the Pac-12. And Kyle, obviously Arizona, the cream of the crop here. And you get below them, and you've got kind of a cadre of decent teams, Oregon, Colorado, UCLA, Arizona State. Is that it? I mean, do you see anybody else rising up from below and putting themselves in a position to compete for an NCAA tournament bid at this point?
Yeah, not really. I see a lot of decent teams in the league. I don't see any others that can jump up in that first group and steal a bid. I mean, you know, the jury's still out on Utah. They might be decent. We don't know. They really haven't done enough to show it. Cal is too inconsistent. Stanford is still an unknown quantity. So, yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of really solid basketball teams in this league. I just don't know that there are a lot of tournament teams in this league.
I'm not sold on Arizona State. Now, in saying that, I'm open to the possibility that they might be good. But, I mean, their biggest win was at UNLV at a time Vegas was just playing atrociously bad, and they barely won. Their next best win is probably at DePaul.
What about Marquette?
Oh, yeah, Marquette at home. Yeah, I'm looking at the RPIs, which are
that's
a little...
That's become the community win.
Yeah, I was going to say, everybody on the West Coast right now is rooting for Marquette to make the NCAA tournament. So,
how good is Marquette? But, I mean, I think that Marquette is solid. They're better than DePaul, that's for sure. Yeah.
Watch out for USC in this league, just because they're not a very good team, but I'm telling you, they're going to knock some teams off and play spoiler this year. They're going to do just enough to be a nuisance.
That's a possibility. I will say, I think Stanford and Cal are in actually okay shape, because Stanford really doesn't have a bad loss. BYU might turn into an average loss with what's happening with them, but you know, Stanford's got that road win at UConn, which I think is going to be immensely valuable to them down the stretch. And Cal, again, they don't really have a bad loss. The UC Santa Barbara loss isn't terrible. That team might make the tournament. And they beat Arkansas on a neutral floor, and Arkansas could make the tournament. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are the little, like, as I look at the bubble, guys, as I look at the teams that are going to be competing for bids, those are the sorts of wins that a lot of other teams simply don't have. And, you know, I think push comes to shove, you know, if they can wind up around 500 or better than that in the Pac-12, they'll be in okay shape when the selection time comes.
They're not going to be okay if the Big 12 gets seven bids like Jimmy Dykes prophesied.
Well, let's talk about the Big 12 and their seven bids. Obviously, Oklahoma State has kind of separated themselves a bit in terms of overall quality. Statistically, they look very good. They only have that loss on the neutral floor to Memphis. They had a nice win on a neutral floor in Vegas versus Colorado. They've beaten Butler. They've beaten Memphis at home. Not a lot of other major challenges, but this is a pretty good team. Obviously, their top competition for the Big 12 title is going to be Kansas, who's been tested a lot more. They obviously have more losses. But, David, who do you like coming out on top in the conference, Oklahoma State or Kansas?
It's a toss-up. I was thinking about that. I haven't been completely blown away by Oklahoma State the way some of you all have. In Kansas,
I haven't been. I just think they've looked good, but not great.
Yeah. In Kansas, although they've lost to really good teams away from home. And I think Nova, that was not a bad loss by any means. I mean, Nova's now a top 10 team, so I think that they are probably more tested going in the conference play. It's been a conference that they've owned. I just can't go against Kansas. I think that's my pick to win the league.
Kyle?
Yeah, I'm admittedly higher on Oklahoma State than both of you, but I will say I think, you know, I see some signs with this Kansas team that I like. Joel Embiid has been getting better as the season goes on. He's got a scary amount of talent. I could see a point in the season where the light just really goes on for him and he clicks. And if he reaches that number one pick potential that he has, they're going to be scary good at the end of the season. So, you know, I'm going to give the edge to Kansas in the race, because even though I think Oklahoma State's more polished, I think Kansas's ceiling is higher, and I think they have more potential down the stretch.
That's fair. The other question, I guess, is how many teams wind up getting into the NCAA tournament? And we joked about this, obviously, Kyle, because of the rather strange proclamations from some of the folks that have been watching these teams. But, you know, I mean, there's a possibility, at least, that there could be seven. I mean, if you take Oklahoma State, Kansas, Iowa State, and Baylor as givens, and that seems like a fairly good bet at this point.
Yeah.
Baylor especially, since apparently they have a win over a team that's already in the Final Four. That's got to help them with the committee. but, you know, let's take the next three case by case. You got Oklahoma, who really doesn't have a good win. I mean, Alabama, that's not a good win. I'm sorry. But they don't have any losses except for Michigan State, which is never going to be a bad loss. What do they have to do to get in, I guess, becomes the question. Don't answer that. I want you to take all three of these at once. You know, they've obviously got to perform well in Big 12 play. Texas is probably got a slightly better case than Oklahoma at this point. Their losses are to BYU on a neutral floor and Michigan State at home. But they beat North Carolina on the road. They beat Temple. They beat Vanderbilt. They beat Stephen F. Austin. They beat Mercer. These are all okay victories. And then Kansas State, they were pretty much out of the action, and then they managed to knock off Gonzaga in one of the more unexpected games so far this season. They still have one really bad loss on their resume, that Northern Colorado loss at home. But they did beat Mississippi. They did beat Gonzaga. How many of these three teams do you see getting in, Kyle?
I think all three of them are capable. I don't see more than one or two of them actually making it. You know, I mean, Texas, like you mentioned, they did go on the road and beat a Final Four team who beat a Final Four team. So that's got to be a big deal. I think Texas has the highest ceiling of these three. I don't know. I'm still not sure what to make of Oklahoma just because we haven't seen enough of them. You know, I think Texas and Oklahoma, I'm not buying on Kansas State. I've seen this team too many times. Mississippi win was a decent one. Gonzaga win is a decent one. But I've seen this team play really poorly too many times this season. I'm not going to be fooled by Kansas State. I don't think they're a tournament team. I think Texas and Oklahoma could be tournament teams. We'll have to wait and see how it breaks out. But I think at the end of the day, you're going to see one of those two teams in.
But not both.
But not both, yeah.
Like Oklahoma.
Okay. David?
I'm not big on Oklahoma at all. I have been kind of impressed by Texas. And K-State, much to my surprise and amazement, is much improved. And actually, I wouldn't be surprised if all three got in. And then you start to look, TCU's 9-3. And don't forget West Virginia and Texas Tech. I mean, this could be a 10-bid league.
Okay, we need to send him back to prison. His
Jimmy Dykes might – I'm tweeting this out to Jimmy Dykes and hope he gives me money.
Anyway, Big East, we already talked about this conference a bit. I think we're all in agreement Villanova's probably going to win this league, right?
Yes.
I would hope so for their sake, or they're in worse trouble than we thought.
How many other teams do you see getting in from this conference, David? Let me start with you.
Not many because of what I mentioned earlier. In fact, it was the Big East that prompted me to go out and search that out. They just don't have the notable wins. I think that they have a lot of decent teams, but unfortunately, I think the status quo is you have to be at least four or five games above 500, and that's if you win no out-of-conference games and you're in a league with teams that did. So I think it's just going to be a competition. I think Nova is pretty much locked up, and they should run away with the league, but I don't know how much room there is after that. How many teams can mathematically finish four games over 500? And even then, does finishing four games over 500 and having no notable out-of-conference wins, is that enough to get a team in? I wouldn't be surprised if it's only three.
I'm gonna say it's probably going to be four just because the wins, I think, will get overinflated a bit within the conference. I like Villanova, Creighton, Georgetown, and Xavier. I think Marquette just hasn't done enough at this point. And, you know, if you look at Marquette versus Xavier in terms of their overall resume, I mean, at least Xavier has beaten Tennessee. They've beaten Cincinnati. They've beaten Alabama on the road. And their losses aren't terrible. Those wins aren't great. I will be the first person to acknowledge that. But they're better than the wins Marquette's bringing onto the table at this stage. I mean, the only notable Marquette win is George Washington at this point.
Right, and I saw a stat today. Xavier's the only top team that's played a top 50 schedule so far and won 10 games. And they're undefeated in the United States. And fake Joe Lunardi is all over that. They haven't lost in a game that didn't require a passport yet.
Okay. Wait, were they in Puerto Rico?
They were in the Bahamas.
The Bahamas. Okay, sorry. Yeah. I wanted
to check. You don't need a passport to get to Puerto Rico, do you?
That's what I was asking, but they were in the Bahamas. I got confused. I forgot they were in Atlantis, but anyway.
Yeah.
But no, you do not need a passport to get to Puerto Rico. Although, don't test that. I one time tried to fly to the U.S. Virgin Islands for my wedding and was told I needed a passport by U.S. Air. That was a really fun experience trying to explain the U.S. Constitution to them. But anyway... Atlantic Coast Conference.
How fun would it have been explaining to your wife that you couldn't make the wedding?
Trust me, she was with me, and it was not a good time.
Since
all
I wasn't asked, I'm going to solicit my interpretation of the Big East standings.
Please go ahead.
I think that they also. I'm going to go with four as well. I'm going to say Villanova and Villanova, Creighton, Butler, and Xavier, and I think Georgetown gets left out.
All right, fair enough. Atlantic Coast Conference, Kyle, coming back to you on this. Syracuse, Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, I think we can all pretty much agree those teams are in good shape. Who's your winner, and how many additional teams do you have getting in?
Syracuse wins, and I will also put Pittsburgh in this field, as well as perhaps Florida State, although I'm still skeptical about the Seminoles.
That's it?
Yeah, I'm going to say five or six.
All right. David?
I actually like Florida State a lot more than Pitt. I mean, Pitt has just beaten up. I mean, they've proven that they're a solid top 200 team when you look at their schedule and how they've dominated those teams. I'm not convinced they're a tournament team at all. I mean, they're fans of Betty Crocker. That's about it. But I do like this Florida State team. And I want to like Notre Dame, but after watching them today, they're just not very good. And they lost a key player. I could see it only being five. And it would be the four you mentioned and Florida State. I'm not big on Pittsburgh.
I think they'll get six in because everybody is fully invested in this being the greatest basketball conference ever, even though it's obviously not.
The fourth best conference this year.
This season, I know. but no, I mean, I think I agree. I think Syracuse runs away with the title this year. Their defense is good enough and their offense is good enough. I don't know what Duke's going to do. I mean, Syracuse might score 120 points against Duke this year. I mean, that's how uninspiring I think Duke's defense has been so far this season. As far as the rest, I mean, I think my plus two, I guess, would be Pitt and Florida State. But I don't feel terribly confident about either one, but I think they'll both end up getting in. So anyway, let's jump over and talk about the last conference, I think, that we haven't talked about, which is the Big Ten. It's probably the deepest conference at this point still, even though it was kind of prematurely declared dead. You've got two teams, really, I guess three teams that have let's say four. I mean, Iowa, I think, has deserved or played well enough to deserve to be mentioned in the same breath as Ohio State, Wisconsin, and Michigan State. All of these teams bring a little bit something different to the table, but, I think Ohio State, obviously, they haven't had the quality of victories that a couple of these teams have had. I mean, obviously, Wisconsin, they beat Florida at home. They beat Virginia on the road. They beat St. Louis. Michigan State, they beat Kentucky, which is a Final Four team, obviously. They also beat Texas on the road. And Iowa, as we mentioned earlier, they do have that win on a neutral floor against Xavier. Ohio State really doesn't have those yet. Their best win so far on the season, I think what would you say, Kyle, at this point? Is it the win at Marquette? I mean, win.
Probably at Marquette, not just because of winning at Marquette, but because of winning by 17 at Marquette. I would say it's probably the biggest.
And it was the most fun game to watch. I mean, it was the epitome a gym to the sport of college basketball.
They did us a solid with that one, without question. You've also got, you've some depth in this conference. Now, Michigan's got some problems. They've lost most of the games that you would have thought they had a chance to be competitive in against good competition. They did beat Florida State. They did beat Stanford, both on neutral floors. But they lost Charlotte, and more to the point, they've lost Mitch McGarry maybe for the rest of the season. That's going to be a real tough situation for that team. Minnesota, they beat Florida State as well. They also beat Richmond. They really haven't beaten anybody else so far on the year. Illinois, they beat Missouri. They looked pretty good against Oregon. They struggled in the first half against UIC last week, yesterday, I guess it was, and then they ended up winning that game easily. You've also got Indiana. Their best win is against Stony Brook. They've struggled against good competition so far this season. And then you start getting down to the lower reaches of things. Penn State, they really don't have a positive win on their schedule except for St. John's. And Purdue, really, I mean, if you want to count a win at West Virginia as being a good win, then I guess they've got a good win. But if you're not willing to say that, then no. So those are really your contenders as far as possible tournament bids. Kyle, let me turn to you first on this. Who do you like winning this, and who do you like making it to the NCAA tournament?
I give the edge as far as winning it to Wisconsin because of not having to play at Ohio State or Michigan State this year. I think that Ohio State probably in terms of probability would be favored to win by about a game, but I think Wisconsin not having to go to those places is going to give them the edge. So I like Wisconsin to win by about a game or so. I think as far as getting bids, this league is set up very nicely to get 7 or 8 bids. I think they're going to end up with 7. I think the last two bids will come down to Illinois or Indiana. I think what might help is that Michigan will be closer to the bottom of the pack without Mitch McGarry. So it'll give teams like Indiana or Illinois a chance to pick up maybe a couple extra good wins here this season. So I think the league will get 7. I think they've got an outside chance of getting 8.
David?
I mean, this is such a good league. I think Ohio State is the best team, but Wisconsin and Michigan State are right up there. I think all of them are 3-line or better, and maybe all of them better. I mean, those are 3 really good teams. I'm not that big on Illinois. I guess I just caught them on a lot of the wrong nights. But, I mean, they did look pretty good against Missouri in that win. I could see them getting in. I really like this Iowa team. I think that they picked up some – I mean, they didn't pick up a lot of big out-of-conference wins, but they picked up enough. And one of the games that impressed me the most was one of the two that they lost. I mean, they went in – to Iowa State, very hostile environment, really intense game. And although they didn't win the game, they certainly demonstrated that this is a team that's capable of playing against a top 25 team in their house. And their other loss wasn't bad either. I mean, it was to Villanova, who I think that we all agree is a lot better than what we thought at the time. I love this Iowa team. Minnesota's look good. Indiana's look good. Purdue, they don't have any impressive wins, but again, they didn't look that bad in there. I want to say they were in Puerto Rico, and they looked pretty good out there. Yeah. I mean, much better than what I thought they would. They came storming back against Oklahoma State. They're not a bad team. I don't know if they're a tournament team. And then you got Penn State, and I don't know, Michigan, they're going to struggle. I think Nebraska will be – Kyle said this about USC earlier. I think Nebraska is going to be one of those snake pits that this isn't a tournament team, but it's a team that's good enough to beat really good teams on their floor. It's not going to be an easy road win. I don't think anybody can circle going into Nebraska and winning is just a cupcake game. And then you've got Northwestern, which is located in Chicago.
No, they're not. They're located in Evanston.
Evanston, my bad.
Yeah. I think that Big Ten really comes down to you've got that top 4, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Iowa. I think that I look at that as a league.
Yeah.
Whoever has the best record against the other teams in that league is going to end up winning. And I think it's going to be Wisconsin. I think that, they've got a little bit of everything this year. I like Iowa as the number 2 out of that. I just there's something about that Iowa team that really seems well put together. And I think Ohio State and Michigan State are very, very good teams. I think all four of those teams have a significant chance of reaching the Sweet 16 and going beyond this year. Yeah. I think the next group of teams really forms its own separate league of six. And we're talking here about Michigan, Minnesota, Indiana, Illinois, Penn State, and Purdue. I can't put Nebraska in there right now. I think they'll play a role of spoiler, but I think that those six teams that I laid out there, I think the top three teams, if you put together the records that those six play against each other, I think the top three teams make the tournament. I think the bottom three teams don't. If I had to pick right now, I'd put my money on Minnesota, Illinois, and I guess Indiana. I mean, I think maybe Michigan. It's going to be Indiana or Michigan as that sixth team. I think both of those teams have some significant flaws. Michigan might actually end up being a little bit liberated by not having McGarry on the floor because they can really just focus on their external game. And, you know, and I think you look at there's a lot of guard-oriented stuff going on with that group of six teams. There's not a lot of really top-notch post players. Illinois may have the best group out of that entire crew there. And I think Purdue is kind of an unknown quantity, like you said. I think that a lot of people have been shoveling dirt on this Purdue team, perhaps prematurely. I think they're going to continue to get better, and I think they're going to be a real thorn in the side of some folks in the Big Ten. So I'll say seven total.
They get their feet put to the fire right away on Tuesday because they host Ohio State to start the league. So we'll see right away what Purdue's made of.
And we'll see one of those League of Six games coming up on Tuesday as well, as we've got Indiana taking on Illinois in Champaign.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a rough one. We've also got Michigan State traveling to Penn State. You know, we always talk about how Penn State is always a tough place to play. It's kind of an underratedly tough place to play as far as this conference is concerned. They've bitten some people in the past. I think all the stuff you guys are saying about not being able to take for granted going into Nebraska and winning a game, I think that's doubly true for going into Happy Valley this year.
Yeah, it's a tough. And then it's interesting, you know, because if this were soccer over in Europe, we'd relegate Northwestern down to the Missouri Valley and call up Wichita State. But that's just not how it works.
Well, we'd probably call up St. Louis because they're in closer proximity and from a better league. But But yes. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up. We're a bit over time, but we appreciate you folks tuning in. We'll be back next Sunday. I will not be here, but Kyle, I believe, will be hosting us for that show as we cover the first week of conference play and we talk about all of the major matchups that occurred and the stuff coming up for the following week. My thanks to our panelists here, David Griggs and Kyle Lamb, and also to Lee Delvecchio, who couldn't join us tonight. I'm Galen Clavio. Thanks for joining us on the Bracket Racket, folks. We'll catch you on the flip side. So long, everybody.